Thanks for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Today's podcast features Conrad Dorozna speaking about his book called By the Wild, The Dogs Trained to Protect Wildlife. This book was written with Graham Spence and Elaine Bell and tells the thrilling story of the conservationist who pioneered the use of dogs in combating poachers to protect wildlife in South Africa's game reserves. Conrad's story is an epic of modern-day wildlife conservation, spiced with adventure, courage, and romance. In this episode of PageCast, Conrad is in conversation with Mario Cesare, best-selling author, game ranger, and conservationist. Enjoy the chat.
Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to our chat on a book titled Called by the Wild, a subject close to my heart about dogs trained to protect wildlife. My name is Mario Cesare, and I will be talking to Conrad Dorozna, whose experiences are captured in his thrilling book, Called by the Wild. I so enjoyed reading this book, it brought back to mind my own experience working with dogs in combating poaching before I retired. So welcome, Conrad.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mario. And I'm so excited to have this discussion with you today.
It's excellent. And congratulations, man. I tell you what, it's a huge achievement to have that little baby in your hands called a book. And well done. It's I'm so pleased that you've got it out and that you you're busy getting the message out. As I want to just get across right from the beginning, is that essentially what comes across in your book and what we're going to discuss is that this is a tribute to the real heroes, the dogs, and their unwavering loyalty and dedication. So I'll just leave that thought to you, Conrad, and you can carry on from there.
You know, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there, Mario. You know, in the beginning of the book, it says there, in memory of Zingela. And Zingela was my sort of first mentor dog trainer out in the wilds on Bongani Mountain Lodge. And in fact, if it were not for Zingela, we would not be having this discussion today, because Zingela was actually really the dog that was instrumental in bringing about this whole story, the culmination of the story getting onto paper and black and white onto the book. So without Zingela, this would not have happened. And I mean, what a truly amazing hero Zingela was for conservation and all of our efforts that we're doing.
Well, at least his legacy will live on, Conrad. And, you know, his untimely and tragic death will not have been in vain. And just by you bringing all the other dogs in, and they're just so many, I just can't name them all. You sort of highlighted his role in this whole thing. And yes, it's a huge thing. I'd just like to also touch on that, the beginnings to get to this point, your love for dogs, not necessarily tracking dogs, but just dogs in general, your love for wildlife and those that persecute it. Conrad, I also want to say that your persistence in your work, when everyone else was naysaying and without any confidence in dogs, pretty much I came against the same kickback. Good on you for pushing through. And if you can give us some insight as to how that started, how you got into that, and how you persisted to the point where you're now a recognized and formidable canine tracking team.
Thank you, Mario. Yes, that's a very important part of the story. So essentially, as it reads in the book, I was operating pretty much as a lone star out there on Bongani Mountain Lodge. Yes, there were the parks officials from the Provincial Parks Board that were looking, well, supposed to be looking after that park. Some of these rangers were up to no good. And as it says there, prior to that, in a couple of different skirmishes and situations where the alarm bells had been ringing and had brought to my attention, you know, in my part of my job was to actually keep an eye on Mteta Musha Game Reserve, because Bongani Mountain Lodge is situated on the Mteta Musha Game Reserve, which is on the southwestern corner of the Kruger National Park, by nearby a village called Matsulu Village, there where the Crocodile River is going through the gorge. And I was appointed by the 99-year leaseholders to keep an eye on what was going on from a conservation perspective in terms of anti-poaching on the reserve. And I was also appointed to work together with the University of Witwatersrand, RARI, Rockhart Research Institute of Witwatersrand, to record the sand hunter-gatherer rockhart, which proliferates that area. There's hundreds of sites up in those mountains. And in the time that I spent going around recording the rock art, all of the poaching incidents started to become extremely apparent. And I kept reports and kept all my diaries about this over the 12 years that I was there. When a couple of situations happened whereby I could see, okay, this is dangerous, and I don't have a partner out there, a fellow field ranger partner to join me out in the bush, I thought, okay, well, you know, the best next companion would become a canine. And so I researched which breed of dog to use, et cetera, which one would suit my purposes. And that's where I came across the Weimaraner breed, which is, as you well know, it's an East German hunting dog breed and highly regarded by the German aristocracy to protect not only the owner on the hunting field, but also against bear, boar, elk, and stag, of which they were hunting as well. The Weimaraner was very adept at large species of game hunting. Okay, this is the breed I'm going to use because they will also protect the owner, the handler. And little did I know that Zingela would prove to be much more trustworthy than any other human would ever be out there in the field, because he's using all of the different senses of scent, hearing, acute hearing, etc. And this is what opened up a whole new world of scent. And the picture of scent out in the field, as you know, is a vital component.
Absolutely. Just to touch back on that sand rock art, which also is fascinating for me. And I was absolutely intrigued when I read in your book how you got involved with that. Ironically enough, I have a friend who has a lovely farm in the Dordrecht area, Maltino, and he showed me some of the rock art that very few people know about on his farm. And there was one tiny little piece of rock art close to his village, staff village. And on that rock art, on that piece of rock, Conrad, rock art painting of a wild dog. It's the first and only picture I've ever seen of sand art depicting a wild dog. And I know the wild dogs don't occur there now, but what was really fascinating for me was it's definitely a Cape hunting dog. And I went to research this and I found that they indeed occurred there 130, 140 years ago. So those bushmen actually saw these dogs working, or probably robbed a kill or two of them. And it was just fascinating. I'm also very intrigued with that. So yeah, kudos to you.
I actually got an image to show you about one in this area.
Fantastic. Because, you know, they didn't occur in the Eastern Cape, as you well know, in recent years. And I Googled it to see, because it was definitely a wild dog. And it was just so interesting to see that did occur there indeed 130, 150 years ago. So these guys were super observant. The other thing is that you touched on researching what dog to use for anti-poaching. I know how much of a headache that was for me as well. And that you're so desperate to make the right decision, because you know what you want done, and you just hope that the dog will qualify in all those particular aspects you need. And well done for you, Zingela, who was absolutely the canine love of your life. And I must say, Conrad, that for me it was a chap called Stefan van den Boer, who had a Belgian Malinois that swam across a river on the Groot Letaba River to bring back a wire snare poacher. And that sort of struck and stuck with me, but didn't register at the time. And then a couple of years later, I went down that route. But after researching German short-haired pointer and so on, and I was nearly going to get a pointer, because they are such excellent dogs. As you say, the hunting breed is just, they're just built for that.
You're 100% correct, Mario. I mean, I chose the hunting dog because, or a hunting breed of dog, because I wanted to then use that dog to show me what was going on with the wildlife in the area, because it's not just about actually tracking down poachers. It's about locating the snares that are hidden in the bush. It's about indicating where animals have been dragged underneath the fence by poachers. It's about many different aspects, and including with that was the protection against potentially dangerous animals. On many, many occasions up in the field, Zingela would alert me to the presence of a buffalo lying down in the thick reeds in a drainage line. And he would stop and he would actually point. And I would then stop behind him and we would retract out of the area, often to find, okay, well, it's a buffalo or an elephant. Or in one case on Sabi Sands, I mentioned it in the book as well, that we walked straight into a slap bang into the middle of a pride of five lions, and they were all fast asleep. And then we managed to get out of there unscathed. But that was the one occasion when Zingela did not forewarn me that there was a whole pride of lions in the bush right surrounding us. I think what had happened on that day was that the wind must have just been, you know, not in Zingela's favor. So, but anyway, we got out of that one without any issues. And yes, going back onto that wild dog. So the sand hunter gatherers in our area with the Bushman Rock Art sites, there are two sites where we know of wild dogs painted. The one is a whole pack and it's in Steltus in Nell Strait. And the other one is on top of Legogorti Mountain, just to the east of White River. And I'm going to just show you this image because I've actually got it on a slide presentation, the one that put it many, many years back. And you can actually see it's painted with hollow patches inside it to mimic that camouflage patterning. So I'm going to show you I'm just trying to get to it. Hang on. Can you see it in the middle there?
Yes. And the big round ears. Clear as daylight, yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Surrounded by some other mountain reedbuck. So the wild dogs, they love mountain reedbuck and inyalas very much to prey on them. And this panel's got those two mountain reedbuck there with those long ears and the wild dog in the middle there. It's quite an interesting panel. That is how the panel is located on the rock. That wild dog painted on that panel on Legogorti Mountain is part of that whole complex panel, which I traced many years back. Then what's interesting to note, just on the right of that wild dog is a painting of a clip springer, which we found very few paintings of clip springers in the rock art in the years of research that happened there. I think there's one of a clip springer in the Kruger and one on Legogorti. That was it for the whole area.
Conrad, if these bushmen didn't record this, these San didn't record this, we would never have known that. Nobody would have known that. Nobody wrote about it. Nobody photographed it. But anyway, that's as fascinating as it is. I've got to ask you, you worked with some of the top men in anti-poaching, Don English. You worked with the guys in Sabi Sand. Is there anything that stands out as an achievement in that particular field, Conrad, that you would like to highlight that possibly Zingela helped you with, or that you're actually proud of what you achieved there? I know there's so many incidents. I can't ask you to relate them all, but is there anything that stands out in your mind?
Yes, Maria. So as I wrote about in the one story, was the time that we went, it was a joint operation between multi different units, which included Sabi Sand, Hilton, Don English was there. There was people from Care for Wild there. There was various different members. There was from SAPS, South African Police Services, and detective agencies, etc. So it was a large joint operation. And, you know, going into the villages at night and going to go and search through five different houses and getting five suspects is no small accomplishment, especially when the intelligence and information is correct. And then you can go straight to the people's houses. And then Zingela indicates on the wall residual scent of a dead rhino from where the poacher had been standing around the carcass when they cut the horns off, because obviously there's blood on the ground, etc. And the poacher standing on that scent stayed on the bottom of those shoes. And even when the guy climbed up the wall into his own house and hid the rifle up in the ceiling, and Zingela wouldn't leave that section of the wall alone. And I kept on saying to Don, the dog is showing me that there is scent here. And of course, I jumped up there and then found the rifle, and the guy had been denying that the rifle was up there. So that was a very, very amazing achievement among many others. Where we are now at today, after, you know, 20 something years later, we have close on 40 dogs that are now service dogs working out there in the field, covering a massive area. Through Canines for Africa, we've donated dogs to different game reserves throughout South Africa and various other parts of the world, in fact, like India. Dogs are really proving to be a force multiplier and one of those essential tools in the box, so all the other rangers say.
I mean, it's just fascinating how this canine conservation came about. Catherine was instrumental in getting it together with you, and then you started this business, and it grew from there into something that's really well-respected and formidable now. Do you want to just give us some insight as to how you started that?
So, yes, Maria, thank you for that. So, obviously, when it came to a head at Mteto Musho Game Reserve or Bongani Mountain Lodge, with that attempted assassination attempt, I knew that, and even Peter, who works with Canine Conservation today as one of the senior managers, he was the one that came to me and said, Conrad, you better get out of here because they're going to kill you. And unfortunately, and he said, look, you've been here too long. You've made too many enemies and you're going to get taken out. So time to head on. And I respected those words from Peter and then went into the Kruger there by Numbi Gate. And that is where I met Catherine. And yes, she was instrumental in helping and co-founding Canine Conservation. I'm not the best of administration people and I hate the office. I prefer to be running around in the field. But nevertheless, she helped out with a lot of the getting all of the paperwork in place, all of the necessary permits and legal requirements, documents, public liability insurance, firearm registry numbers, a lot of different. It's a legal paperwork nightmare that one has to go through in order to become a security provider in this country. And it didn't just happen overnight. So obviously this extended through to the time in the Sabi Sand, Viltain. And then I essentially took the leap of faith and said, because I wasn't being supported as I wanted to with the canine development phase at Sabi Sand, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to resign and start my own company. And that is after even starting with the paperwork trail, I then decided to resign and then literally was unemployed. And a week later, Elmond, one of my best friends there and rangers in the Sabi Sands and Zingela were both dead. I was even told that Giant, his dog, was dead. And then there was a whole story from there. So literally within a couple of weeks of leaving the Sabi Sands, having no, being unemployed, no job, all of a sudden, now I'm left without my companions. And luckily, I'd kept Landa and then headed up to Henry's place up in Pretoria to go and fetch Landa because he had been there in that kennel facility. And from there, it was off down to KwaZulu, pretty much living like a gypsy. And everything that I owned was in the back of the vehicle. And I had Landa. So started from nothing. And then it was like climbing up the Yosemite National Park cliff kind of situation. I truly believe that by starting with nothing really taught me a lot of hard lessons in life, and losing Zingela and other companions right at that juncture was either, look, you're going to have to swim and float, otherwise you're going to sink, buddy. So get on with it. And Catherine was a support during those years. She obviously had to go back and forth between England and South Africa because she was only out on a visa. And in the meantime, whilst I was in South Africa the whole time, I would carry on with various different conservation efforts and jobs. And then it ended up at Tanda Game Reserve in Zululand. And that was where we then became registered as a security provider right at the beginning of when the large numbers of rhinos started to getting poached and they were dropping like flies all over the place up in this greater Kruger system as well. And that's when the call came through, okay, Conrad, get up here, because they knew how I operated on Sabi Sand. And it was the Singita group that were the ones who placed faith in the dogs and what I did in the years at Sabi Sand. They were the ones who trusted in it to the extent that they said, okay, we're willing to give you a chance. And we then started with three rangers, three rifles, two vehicles, and three dogs at the Sabi Sand.
Amazing, Conrad, how far you've come. And to the point that your respect and reputation got to the point where even as far afield as India, people looked to get your expertise under their belt. And very briefly, if you can just quickly, before I go on to how your soulmate is actually now a part of your life, and how, you know, when you describe Ankit in your book, I get this picture of Boudica, this British warrior,
yes,
her horse. You know, this is how I picture her, and you describe her so well in that sense. But anyway, just before that, Conrad, if you could just touch on the Indian thing, if you want to, just give a brief how diverse this book is and how wonderful it spreads. It doesn't focus just on one thing. How this has spread right across to even countries like India, where your reputation and expertise was sought.
Yes, Mario. So the Wildlife Conservation Trust of India, they're a massive organization and they're doing amazing work there. So what they did was they were wanting to find, because they protect the wildlife corridors between the villages and towns and cities. I mean, it's of vital importance that they have a thorough understanding of the movements of wildlife and even of the tigers and leopards and lions that live literally on the outskirts of all these villages. And in India, in the central part of India, it is teeming with wildlife, that the wildlife coexists with the people there. And yes, there's conflict. So the Wildlife Conservation Trust of India, their primary focus and function is to mitigate that conflict by means of scientific research and data gathering, and then proposing to the forestry officials as to what steps should be taken in place, building underpasses under major transport routes and highways. And to a large extent, I mean, they've been and they are being very successful there. So they did their research. They wanted to know, okay, where do we find dogs? Obviously, on every single street in India, there's a pack of feral dogs there. But they wanted to know, okay, well, how do we work with these dogs? Where can we get working line dogs from? And who will give us the training? So they did their research and they came across canine conservation because, I mean, the name canine conservation, if you type in canine dog and or conservation, the website will come up. And they then did their research and they phoned and called and said, okay, can you help us? And I said, of course we can. And therefore then started the process of they came out to us and spent 3 months with us, and it was an intensive training course and set up, and they worked with multiple different breeds, and they were the ones who said, okay, we want 2 Weimaraners and we want 2 Belgian Malinois. And they chose the 2 different breeds for the 2 different purposes that they effect. So obviously the Weimaraners focus is more tailored to the track indicating presence of animals and tracking animals and indicating if there's been any blood or poaching, etc. Whereas the Belgian Malinois, with the dogs that are being used more for if there's a rowdy crowd of people who want to throw stones at them to indicate the presence of the electrical wires around the fields, because those electrical wires around the fields kill hundreds of thousands of animals, including elephants and anything else that touches them. So they even developed a special harness device with a fiberglass rod sticking out in front of the dog and with a little piece of rope that if they were walking, they could see if the rope bent inwards, then there was a wire, because you know how wires are in the bush, Maria. You can't even see them. They're so well blended. From there, they went back to India. And then, of course, this whole story happened with the tigers and the tiger cubs. And that's why the whole process of getting the dogs up, which they had already identified, was expedited. And we then went to the Indian consul in Johannesburg, and they fast-tracked everything. So it was literally not even a week's notice. And we were off on a plane up there with shipping permits for the dogs. It was quite an undertaking, but I mean, where there's a will, there's a way. So if we have to do it, we do it.
Well done, Conrad, and excellent discussion on that particular aspect. I just want to also say that I remember when you came to where I worked at Olifants, and I remember Zingela. I remember you had, I don't know if it was Zingela or who it was, but you had 2 beautiful Weimaraners. It was in the budding stages of canine conservation, and it was a hard sell. Even the protract guys and the wardens in the area were very reluctant to take on canine. And I'm so glad that you eventually proved them wrong. And I later with Saba, my Belgian Malinois, was also able to achieve a measure of success. When I was asked to give this chat, and I knew you'd publish this book, I was just so happy to do it. It just brings back so much warmth to what I remember. What's closest to my heart are my dogs and the dogs I worked with. And as you say, they don't betray you, Pat. They don't betray you. They don't go behind your back, stab you in the back. They are as loyal as you can imagine. And I respect that. And I respect the fact that your book is basically focused on that, which is fantastic. I just want to say, I just hope that the listeners have found this chat as fascinating as I have been chatting to you, Conrad. I don't know if you want to elaborate on your wedding under a baobab as a closing. I mean, my daughter said to me, "Dad, you know, I know you wished I would have got married barefoot under a baobab." And I said to her, "No, one of my good friends has just done that." Anyway, yeah. Conrad, I don't know if you want to just say some parting words before I close. Do you want to touch on that very unfortunate incident that happened on Olifants when just before I left with Patrick's, one of your employees' dogs that was taken by the leopard, which was a tragedy. But these things happen in the bush and one has to bounce back and carry on. I don't know if there are any other stories you want to just close with before we tape off.
Mario, yes, I would like to elaborate on that a little bit. You know, today, Patrick, who was the field ranger deployed there in the Olifants, still has a black German shepherd. In fact, he has two black shepherds to this day now. And yes, he had two black shepherds when he was there by you. Those leopards are so cunning and so effective and efficient at taking down prey, is that one of their favorite prey items are dogs. And we have had quite a few. In fact, we've had several scrapes with leopards over the years. That was by no means the only one. On another occasion, you know, and I mean, Patrick was highly distraught by it because we developed these very close bonds and ties with our working service dogs out there in the field. Patrick was living with these dogs all the time. They didn't leave his side. And there goes a leopard jumping over the bowman and grabs the younger of the two canines right in front of him. And I mean, he was distraught. He phoned me in an absolute upset state, which is very akin. I could relate to it because of what happened with how I lost Zingela and what happened with Zingela. And I always say the two most dangerous things for working dogs is our vehicles being number one, and number two being a leopard. Especially if we're out in the bush, leopards are just the ultimate stealth machine, predator machine out there, animal out there, and they would love nothing more than to put their jaws around a dog. And so we had another incident on a specific reserve where the dog was walking in front of the handler and there was two backup field rangers in a Y formation. These guys are now today, we arm our field rangers with AK-47s and they're self-loading carbines, 30-round mags. And this leopard came and grabbed the dog right in front of its handler in the drainage line. Big male leopard, and then started dragging the dog off. And the handler actually went and jumped on top of the leopard and his dog. And the leopard got a fright, let go, ran into some gwari bushes, and then very quickly came back again. And it was coming straight. Now, the handler had the dogs in his arms like this, holding the dog up off the ground. And the leopard was coming back to take the dog from out of his arms. And that obviously constituted a serious danger to both handler and canine. And one of the backup rangers shot the leopard in self-defense. And as you know, as you've read, I also had an incident with the leopard and there were dogs involved. But the leopard went for me instead of the dogs. So I also had to ended up in a situation of having to destroy that leopard. We were trying to help the leopard. Unfortunately, what happens is on many of these game reserves, the leopards become so habituated to human presence that they lose their fear of humans. And as you well know, them losing their fear of humans places the rangers with their service dogs in great peril because the leopards are just no longer fearful. And so we've had several incidents. We've had African rock python take one of our dogs. We've had crocodile incident. And crocodiles are one of the worst as well, because there's nothing you can do about it. Once that dog locks his, the croc locks his jaws around the dog, you will watch the eddying swirls of water and say goodbye. You'll never see your dog again. And that is a terrible thing to have to go through. So we are very disciplined in today's world, how we conduct our functions and services with dogs. And we've managed to learn enough to bring that threat to a minimum.
Hit the nail on the head there when you say that the habituation, the leopards associate dogs with humans, and they just lose that fear. Once that fear is lost, it's good night. In conclusion, it's just to say I want to wish you and Anka all the best for the future, because you guys are doing a sterling job, let me tell you. I always had faith in the canines, as my fellow Baluli wardens will attest one day. And to the point that that Patrick worked there for a good long while after a lot had given him no chance. So I just want to wish you and Anka all the best for the future. And I want to say in closing that this is just a reminder. Your book is named Call by the Wild by Conrad de Rosner. Can be obtained in any good bookstore and online. And I just wish you all the success with it, Conrad.
Thank you, Mario. Yes, you know, the subcaption to the book called By the Wild reads the subcaption, Dogs Trained to Protect Wildlife. And that is exactly the epitome of what the book is about. It's about dogs and conservation, protecting our natural environment, and the dogs being our allies and force multipliers when we're out in the field. They are and have become a vital component of conservation efforts, not only in South Africa in the game parks and reserves, but also around the world. And when there was originally in South Africa, when it was dogs were met with distrust and in terms of being able to do the job out there, we refer to our dogs as a service dog qualified as a qualified field ranger. They have exactly the same rank as a field ranger, and there's no difference to the fact that it's on four legs and a human's on two. A qualified service dog is regarded as a service field ranger out there in the field. So they have the same rank as a field ranger does. And I think that's the important part. Everyone has come to realize that, yes, working service dogs are a vital pillar of conservation efforts in today's world. And many people are now doing it. So I'm happy for that.
Your book has done exactly that, Conrad. It highlights that particular aspect. The respect. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mario. You must keep well.